Blog Talk Radio.
This is an NBC News bulletin. There is a report from Dallas that President Kennedy has been shot. Here is a late report from Bob Thornton in Dallas.
Information is still sketchy at this time. We have just talked with two eyewitnesses, a man and his wife who were standing near the president's motorcade. They said that a shot rang out from behind them. They thought at first it was a firecracker. Then, according to the eyewitnesses, one woman who was in a hysterical condition told us that the president was hit in the side of the head and fell into his wife Jacqueline's arms. He was rushed to Dallas Parkland Hospital. We have not had confirmation at this moment as to whether he was actually hit, his condition, or any further details. This is Bob Thornton in Dallas for NBC News.
And this has been a Hotline Special Report. Stay tuned to your NBC station for late-breaking developments on this story.
That's how a lot of Americans got the news back 50 years ago, November 22, 1963, learning the unthinkable that President John Fitzgerald Kennedy was indeed shot and later pronounced dead in Dallas. Hi, welcome aboard. It is the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. We will devote a large portion of our show today to the JFK assassination, the conspiracy theories, the myth that has surrounded John F. Kennedy. For all of us, even those of us who are too young to remember where we were on that fateful day, it has become embedded in our cultural psyche. We're going to talk about that. If you're listening live, that's Monday at 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east. Feel free to join us at 347-857-4505. You can also hit us up on Twitter at AB Writes. And speaking of Central Time, our hearts and prayers going out to the folks in the Midwest who suffered a lot of damage yesterday in that calamity, that series of tornadoes. Hang in there, and I'm really hoping for a speedy recovery, but a lot of devastation out there. So hang in there, folks. So the JFK assassination has sparked our curiosity so much that about 1,000 books have been written about it, countless dramatizations, TV movies, movies. Of course, the most famous movie is probably JFK, Oliver Stone's 1991 film, which is really something of a convoluted mess. I've seen it a couple of times, but it's fascinating in a lot of ways, and it does have some singularly powerful performances, but as a whole, I don't think it really fits together. The one that I saw most recently was Parkland, which is a very nice, small movie. It moves briskly. It's about a fraction of the time of JFK, but it really is more about the ancillary characters surrounding the assassination on that day. Abraham Zapruder, the Secret Service people, people in the working at the hospital, as well as Oswald and his brother and his mother. Very weird, quirky performance by Jackie Weaver. Fascinating little film. I do recommend it. Of course, they did a dramatization, I think, of Bill O'Reilly's Killing Kennedy on one of the channels. And a lot of documentaries are coming out this week. The news shows are having all of these things. So fascinating stuff. The question is, though, do you believe that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, or was there a conspiracy? Now, most Americans do believe there was some kind of conspiracy. About 61%, in fact, believe that someone else or other forces were involved. That is down from the 90s, when about 75% of Americans believe that, and that may be because of that backlash after the Oliver Stone film. But it's not just crazy people, because, you know, we're not all crazy, right? Secretary of State John Kerry expressed views that he can't believe it was just one person. Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, Robert Kennedy's oldest daughter, came out on a talk show, I think, over the weekend and said that. So it's interesting. We have a guest on today, Bill Dean. You've heard him before. He is the author of that fascinating book, Smooth Criminal, A One-Man American Crime Wave, a former CBS assignment editor, broadcaster, and author, and founder of the OurMissingNews.com website. And he is in the camp with the 61%, frankly, right, Bill? Hey, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining
us. Hello, Amy. Thank you very much for the opportunity, because it's just amazing to me that there's a cross-section of interest here, that you've got the elderly people that remember it, and you've got the young people that are walking around and saying, what really happened there that day?
Exactly.
It's total demographics here. It's not, you know, you want to point in and get the 40-year-olds. No, you get everybody when you talk about this. It's just amazing, and it surprises me that there's so much interest 50 years later. It sure is a lot of interest.
Well, I don't know. If it's not surprising so much because we do love conspiracy theories. We love mysteries in this country. And this is kind of a mystery because we don't really know exactly what happened. I mean, there are people in both camps. I know you're probably familiar with Vincent Bugliosi, who the former Charles Manson prosecutor wrote the famous book Helter Skelter. He wrote a book a few years ago called Reclaiming History. And he believes, he's in the minority on this, he does believe that it was just Lee Harvey Oswald. And he asserts, and I think I saw him on Geraldo Rivera's show a couple of weeks ago, asserting that the reason he believes, and this is kind of interesting, why people don't accept the fact that it was Oswald is they can't wrap their mind around one person who was an insignificant person, could take the life away of the president and could really dismantle this whole dream, this whole myth that we had. Now, you know, there was also a guy on CBS the other day who recreated the Zapruder film through computer technology and pointed to the fact that there was that one shot that came from the depository. Now, of course, you could argue even if it was in fact the lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald could have been put up to it by somebody else, and that's your contention, right? I mean, you do believe there was obviously other forces involved. Is that safe to say?
Absolutely, and they wanted Oswald to be a patsy. He was an ideal person. Here you got Marcello, the boss of New Orleans, looking for somebody to take it when they had to kill Kennedy. They felt that they had to kill him because they felt that they were double-crossed. They felt that they won the election in Chicago by rejiggering the vote. And here you got Bobby, who's got this big hearings going on, and that they've thrown. Bobby has thrown in over 100 mobsters. And they really humiliated Marcello. Marcello was caught by the FBI down in New Orleans coming back from Washington, and they handcuffed him and they dumped him over in Guatemala where he was born. And they did that a couple of times. And look at the humiliation for a mobster, the boss of New Orleans. And the way you operate as a boss, you operate out of fear. You know, the people under you are going to be obedient because they're afraid they're going to be killed. And his lieutenants must have just been snickering here that the boss that they feared so much was humiliated by Bobby Kennedy for dumping him over
okay,
in
so
Guatemala.
So back you up. Let's back you up for a second here, because your contention is that it was the mob that did this, the mafia, not Castro or the CIA and the FBI, although you believe they knew about it, right?
They knew about it, and actually that's the reason that they didn't want to admit it. Can you imagine if the FBI and the CIA said, oh, yeah, we knew Lee Harvey Oswald. We've been following him. They'd immediately shortcut that thing, the public would, and they'd say, why the hell didn't you throw him in jail? It could have been the assassination could have been avoided. But they're following a lot of people. And right now they're following some nuts out there, and we'd be going crazy if we were told all of the things that the FBI and the CIA are doing right now to keep us safe. And that was the case. So they had to keep quiet. If they mentioned that they knew this guy, you know, I mean, people would go over to Langley, Virginia, and blow up the place or something.
Yeah, well, of course. Well, you can't. The thing is, also, as you said, you can't preemptively put somebody in jail who is just a crackpot. I mean, they have to actually have done something to warrant that. I mean, I'm sure they have threats all the time now that are unfortunately field against the president.
There was something that you had. Something that you had on the top there with the announcer, or the news, the reporter, and he quoted that it was coming from the side, that the bullet hit the president in the head from the side. This is why people feel that there was more than one Lee Harvey Oswald, because it is true that the president was hit in the front or side, and because the physics of it, a bullet goes in, it's a very, very little tiny hole, and when it comes out of your head, it just blows the back of your head or the front of your head off, and it blew the back of his head off. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald was behind, so it would have blown the front of the head off, and it didn't. As they said, it came from the side of the grassy knoll. And to say that it was one bullet that that did all of this is unbelievable. This is the only thing in the JFK movie by Oliver Stone that is worthwhile seeing, because I truly believe this is a dancing bullet. Listen to this: the bullet transfers 15 layers of clothing, 7 layers of skin, and approximately 15 inches of tissue, struck a necktie knot, removed 4 inches of rib, and shattered a radius bone. The bullet was found on a gurney. They think that it was on the one with Governor Colony. It's crazy to think that one bullet could do that. And then that bullet that was shown was in perfect shape. Just the back of the bullet where the firing pin hit. And can you imagine that bullet doing all of that and being in perfect shape?
But if they knew about it that day, I mean, how many people were involved in covering it up then is the question. Because if you're saying there were actually several bullets,
The Warren Commission admits that the first bullet didn't hit anybody. And then they say the second bullet did everything. It was a single bullet to do this. If you listen to it, you hear 4 different shots on the recording. And they don't talk about that because Oswald would not be able to shoot off 4. This is a bolt-action rifle. It's not an automatic rifle where you can go boom, 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 boom. You have to pull it back and start it again, pull it back and start it again. And the most that he could do would be 3. Supposedly it's just one bullet that did it. There had to be, if you're going to try to kill the president, and you followed him in Tampa and Miami, you failed, you went to Chicago and you failed, and then you tried in Dallas, and you're just not going to take this nut, Lee Harvey Oswald, who couldn't be trusted. I mean, he went into rages and through his childhood and as an adult too. And are you going to trust the whole thing to a Lee Harvey Oswald? No, you're going to have some of your mafioso hitmen with you too. And I believe that there were 2 on the grassy knoll.
But what is the, you know, it's interesting if you bring the mafia into it and you make a case of what their motives would have been, and I get that. But how did they recruit Lee Harvey Oswald? Because, of course, his contention was that he was, and his mother, I think, still believed that he was a double agent for the government and the whole thing. He had a lot of self-aggrandizement ideas about his CIA.
You got to understand that Lee Harvey Oswald could relate, could empathize with Fidel Castro. It's a fact. Nobody denies it, that we were trying to kill Fidel Castro. And he is a little guy, Oswald, and he felt that Castro was too. And so he related to him. And he was out there in New Orleans handing out leaflets saying, "Fair play for Cuba." Well, here's Marcello, the boss of New Orleans, who wants to get Kennedy. He knows that Marcello, is about to go to jail, and that's a damn good reason to get Bobby Kennedy. This is the guy that was throwing everybody in jail. And then Traficante, the boss, on his deathbed, told his lawyer, Frank Regano, the truth, what I believe is the truth. And when I heard this, I forgot about the single bullet and all this kind of stuff. I said, there it is, and all the pieces fit, and it fits with the mob, too. We're talking about the mob boss, and Frank Regano listened to what he heard from Traficante, and according to Frank Regano, Traficante on his deathbed said, "I got a call." And I'll bet you it was from Marcello. He never said that. He said, "I got a call," and the caller said, "We got to get Kennedy." And I said, "Sure, what the hell? You know, he's doing all this kind of thing," you know, because he thought he was talking about Bobby. And the guy on the phone said, "We're not talking about Bobby." And Traficante said, Jack's not doing any problem for us. Why that? And in typical Sicilian, somebody's got to write write Sicilian poetry. And typical Sicilian poetry, you cut off the head, the tail won't wag, meaning Bobby was the tail. And immediately that worked. Immediately, Bobby Kennedy, who was running this assassination thing, throwing these mobsters in jail, right and left, over 100 of them, and Marcello was about to go. And there's a real reason for the mob to get rid of Bobby. And it worked perfectly because the moment of the assassination in Dallas, Bobby gave up on that hearing and said, I think the mob did it, but I don't want to get involved. And people in his office are quoted, a number of people saying he referred to that over the years. Over the 4.5 years after the assassination of his brother, saying, I think it was the mob, but I don't want to get involved.
He said that to people in his office, people who knew him. He didn't say that publicly, though, did he?
No, he didn't.
Nobody said anything publicly, right?
You got several people that are saying that they heard it. They heard it on different occasions.
No, I mean, I'm not even doubting that he said it. I'm just saying that nobody, you know, it's interesting that with the Warren Commission and everything else, was there a concerted effort to cover it up, or people were just misguided? I mean, this is where it's quizzical to
me.
I don't know.
Well, it was people in his office, and I guess if you work for somebody, you don't go and tell all over the world, or maybe you did, and the news media don't listen to you. There's a book on that, and it was written by a number of people that worked in his office over the years, and they confirm separately, independently, that Bobby would say that periodically. All the pieces fit to me, and they didn't fit until I heard that Trafficante confession.
So that's what put you over the top. Before that, you believed that it probably was.
Oh, yeah. I said, I don't know what it is. When I first heard, it was Jack Anderson who said that it was the mob, and I thought that was the craziest thing in the world. I said the government would destroy the mob if they killed the president. And the mob was very, very... the mob was connected to the Kennedys since Prohibition days. And it goes way back to Joe Kennedy up in Boston, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a good friend to Joe Kennedy, and he told the police to look the other way and let Joe Kennedy fill the warehouses full of booze before Prohibition was ended. And,
so this was a sense of betrayal on the part of the mob because they thought the Kennedys were kind of in their pocket.
Well, sure. And now you got West Virginia, and Bobby and Jack is running for president, and it was a big race between Hubert Humphrey and Jack Kennedy, and the person that won in West Virginia, they felt would win the nomination at the Democratic convention, and a telephone call was made by Joe Kennedy to Sam Giancana, up in the big boss up in Chicago, and said, "Can you please help us in West Virginia?" And Sam said, "No problem at all." Well, he got to the union bosses. West Virginia's a big union state, and they told their rank and file to vote for Kennedy, and Kennedy beat Humphrey and went on to win the nomination. Again, the mob is doing a favor, and now on the election day, the vote was held in Chicago, and it was very, very close. And Lyndon Johnson held the vote in Texas. All the states had come in, and they were held until 9 o'clock in the morning, when the mob claims they rejiggered the vote in Illinois, and that's what put Kennedy over the top. But you know, we get the vote in about 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, you know, and here it took until 9 o'clock in the morning, and I think that Lyndon Johnson was holding the Texas vote in case that didn't come through in Illinois, and he didn't have to do anything. That put him over the top.
A long night, they said, right? What was your you were around when the assassination took place, so what was your reaction when you first heard about it?
What part of it?
Just knowing that he was killed?
I just don't know. I was totally puzzled. And I believed, I went along with the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald did it. And because I was told to believe that, and I didn't have any proof that it was untrue. It's the evidence here. There's so many cases. Here the mob felt totally double-crossed. Hey, we put you in the White House, and now you got your brother who's throwing us in jail. You don't double-cross the mob. And it doesn't even matter if you're president of the United States. They had to show that you don't double-cross the mob. And they were successful in doing that.
I'm still unclear in your description of this as how the mob got a hold of Oswald and got him involved. Now, there was Oswald at one point, you said his connection to Cuba. He wanted to go to Cuba, and Fidel Castro denied him access. Is that right?
Yeah, you know that he was in Mexico City. He wanted to go and see Castro. Castro knew that it looked like Oswald would be the assassin, and he knew about it. And he didn't want to be associated with Oswald at all. So Oswald was stuck over in Mexico City for about 2 weeks. And the word from the Cuban embassy was, no way, you're not getting in to Cuba. And Castro is really brilliant. He's smart. He knew that if Oswald was over there and just before the assassination, he would be connected to the assassination that he knew about. And it's very interesting. Now, we just found out that a guy by the name who became transportation secretary under the Ford administration, William Coleman, was a young guy, and Castro had asked, because he knew that they might associate Castro with this assassination, and so he asked for a meeting with the CIA, and William Coleman went out in a boat very secretly. We just found out about this, amazing. And they talked for 3 hours, and when Coleman got through talking with Castro, he was totally in agreement that Castro had nothing to do with this. He knew, Castro knew about it. He had wind of it, like the CIA and like the FBI. But he was not involved in killing because he was too smart. He knew that the United States would be over there with B-52s, and they would have gone into Cuba, and they would have put him in handcuffs and thrown him in jail the way they did with Noriega in Panama a few years ago. We would have had a perfect excuse, you know. Cuba killing the president of the United States, well, we ought to retaliate, and we would have. So Castro was very smart to get this meeting and convince William Coleman that he was not involved. And he really wasn't involved, but he was aware of this guy. He knew about it, like the FBI and like the CIA knew about it. But that
now,
doesn't
is,
mean that
the
they
thing,
were a part
the
of the conspiracy.
Yeah, well, this is what hangs people up. Just so people know, we're talking with Bill Dean, the author of Smooth Criminal, A One-Man American Crime Wave, and has become something of a JFK assassination conspiracy expert along the way with all his sources and research. So if you want to call in, by the way, 347-857-4505 if you're listening live or on Twitter at AB Writes. My question, and we got a few people in advance on Twitter asking this too, where it breaks down for people who are kind of on the fence about the conspiracy when you involve the FBI and the CIA, if the government knew about it, again, they can't just throw everybody in prison, but if they really knew that it was going to happen, I mean, they didn't do anything to actively try to stop it. So how did they know about it, and why do you think they went along with it? Do you think they didn't want to actively? Did they want Kennedy to get killed, is the question.
Well, they didn't even know if it was going to happen. They attempted, the mob attempted to get them in Tampa, in Miami, in Chicago. And in Chicago, they changed the route. They had rumor that this assassination attempt really looked serious, and they changed the route at the last moment. And the guys that were in the motel that were going to shoot out of the fourth or fifth floor or whatever, dropped their weapons and just left. And the maid went into the room and found the weapons that they were going, the AK-47s that they were going to kill the president with. He was going to go to Chicago to see the Air Force Army football game, and they said the president had a change of plans at the last moment, and then they didn't know if it was going to hit in Dallas. Can you imagine the FBI and CIA saying, "Hey, it's going to happen in Miami. Hey, it's going to happen in Tampa. Hey, it's going to happen
well,
in"? You drive people crazy. And then they wouldn't believe it would be like the boy crying wolf.
Now, do they say anything to the president, though, about these security things? Or they,
oh,
they don't,
yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah.
So
oh,
the
yeah.
question is, why was he driving in an open convertible motorcade in Dallas?
Because it was a sunny day. That's all I can say. And because he wasn't afraid.
He wasn't afraid. They
normally would have the top on. They have the top on now for sure, all the time, I think. But he was a meter and greeter. At the airport when he got off, he shook hands and was having a great time.
I get that, but you see where this breaks down for me in terms of the security. If they knew that there were these threats and there were these attempts around the same time that this happened, and he knew there was these threats, you think they would have taken that precaution to make sure he certainly wasn't in an open motorcade? I mean, that kind of, to me,
maybe
breaks down
insisted on it.
Yeah, maybe.
Because, I mean, you know, you've got these threats all the time. So I guess if you're in that position that they're after you all the time, you just get used to it and deal with it.
Just live with it. Yeah.
I'm sure that Obama's hearing it too.
Yes,
but it's very difficult
to get
a president, and that's why they really had to have a couple of other people on it that they wouldn't have trusted. Lee Harvey Oswald. I'm not even sure that he even fired. They put three shells down there, and we don't know. Maybe they put the shells down. Maybe they hadn't been fired. You know, maybe they were fired some other place, and they were empty shells. And he was the patsy. That's exactly what the mob wanted. They wanted this guy to go to jail for them, and nobody would be looking. You asked about New Orleans. Here was Lee Harvey Oswald handing out leaflets and so forth, and mobster boss of Marcello is looking for somebody because their decision on the part of the mob was to get somebody to get Kennedy. And so, of course, they didn't want to have any link. Lee Harvey Oswald had absolutely no link to the mob. And that's exactly the kind of person. And they found such an ideal guy. Here he loved Castro. Here he saw Castro. The United States was trying to kill Castro. There's no argument about that today. And here he felt totally justified to kill the president before he killed Castro. It's also true about the Mexico City thing. He was waiting around to get over and say, hi, Castro, you know, I really, look at what I'm doing for you. And when he was really rejected and told, you're not going to Cuba, he is quoted as saying, now I'm going to kill JFK. And he marched out of Mexico City and went back to Dallas.
It's interesting because there was somebody who knew Lee Harvey Oswald and his wife shortly before the assassination, who said that they, both Lee Harvey Oswald and his wife, seemed to have an obsession, not a negative obsession, but a positive obsession with the Kennedys. They liked their style. They had all the Life magazines with them on the cover and that kind of thing. So it's funny how it turned into the killing. But what do you think about, of course, then you had 2 days within 48 hours, Lee Harvey Oswald was shot dead by Jack Ruby, and that's another kind of murky figure that kind of makes this...
Well, he was working. I mean, you cannot run a strip joint in America without being connected to the mob, even
right,
today.
Okay. Well, this is my question: was it planned that they were going to kill Lee Harvey Oswald to shut him up after that? Or no?
He got the order from Sam Giancana, his boss, who let him keep a strip joint in Dallas, Texas. And the order was, you gotta shut up Oswald before he talks. And if you look at Oswald just before he's shot, he's very confident. He doesn't have his head down or anything else. He just knows that he's going to say, "Hey, I was just a patsy. I didn't know anything about this." And of course, they didn't want him to do that. You got to say also, you should know that the CIA was following. It doesn't mean he's involved. Doesn't mean the CIA is involved with Lee Harvey Oswald. But they saw, because he wanted to go to Russia behind the Iron Curtain, that maybe they could use him. Maybe they could get some information out of him. And
well, he was in Russia. He lived in Russia for a while, right?
I'm sorry. Not about a year and a half, where he married.
Didn't he denounce his American citizenship for a while and then came back?
Yeah, I have to say, isn't that something? I mean, if I want to go to Canada, I want to renounce my American citizenship and go to friendly Canada, and then I change my mind and say, no, I want to come back to the United States. Give me my citizenship back. That's exactly what happened to Lee Harvey Oswald. He went to Russia, said, I want to be Russian. Also, he got out of the Marines. I was in the Army. I think that they'd laugh at me if I said, I want to go home. He said, I want to go home. And so they said, okay. So and he got an honorable discharge, believe it or not, and went home. He supposedly was going to take care of his mother, and that was the excuse that the Marines were given, and they accepted. He went home for 2 days, and then he was on his way to Helsinki, Finland. And then he goes in, and he's there for a year and a half, says, I want to come back to the United States. And the CI says, oh, just fine. Welcome back. Because he was... He was handling information. It doesn't mean the CIA. He was a CIA agent. He was a CIA operative, and operatives work for the agents. And as you could see in my book, Smooth Criminal: A One Man American Crime Wave.
Yeah, they take all kinds of unsavory characters sometimes. That's true. If you read your book, you'll discover that. But it's a fascinating story, and because of all these different layers of his life being so strange and convoluted, his journey. Then you add in the fact that. You know, you have the Cuban connection, and then you have Jack Ruby killing him, and then I think Jack Ruby killed himself. Is that right?
No, Jack Ruby went to jail, and he died, surprisingly, in 3 years. I can't explain that.
Oh, he went to jail. Okay.
He was a total loyal mafioso guy. It's very interesting. You know, I mean, we talk about the cheats today compared to the loyalty in the past. It's also in the mob. The mob, they put the blood on the Godfather and on themselves, and now they're connected and all that. They still do the ritual today, but they don't live up to it. Immediately, the FBI says, hey, we've caught you. We're going to throw you in jail. And, well, I'll talk. I'll give you the names of six other guys. You want six guys or you want me? And the guy goes off into witness protection. That happens now. And in loyalty, he had to follow through. And Jack Ruby, I mean, had to follow through. And he was told, you got to kill Oswald. So he shuts up. And he did. It all connects, all these pieces. And then we didn't even get into Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe was about to spill the beans this is really amazing. This is quite a story about Marilyn Monroe. She felt, through bedroom talk apparently, and we can assume that the president was, after 8 years in office, he was going to divorce Jackie and get married to Marilyn. I think that this is crazy, but this is in Marilyn's thought, and it's also in her best girlfriend who said that she was positive that they were going to get married. Well, Mother Rose told the boys to stop fooling around with Marilyn because she was a loose cannon. And you can see what was about to come when you saw that birthday suit that she was wearing over at Madison Square Garden and singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President. Mother Rose says the press is going to spill this, that you're connected to Marilyn Monroe and all that, and something's got to be done. And so Marilyn thought that she was really in with the White House, and she called when the Kennedy stopped talking to her. She called like 100 times a day, going crazy that she couldn't get through to John, and so they knew that she supposedly was going to reveal to about Sam Giancana and about the whole damn thing, they had to get rid of her.
So your theory is that she wasn't a suicide, that somebody killed her off?
Oh, no. You can see the explanation. We don't have to go into detail. You can get it on your computer. I would like to say that if you'd like to back up, see my story, you can go to Frontline. Frontline, November 17th, just yesterday, 1992. It takes an hour, and it will. You'll hear a lot of these quotes and so forth on that 1 hour, and I think that you'll be convinced, as I was, that it was the mob.
That's the one that put you over. Wow, okay.
Yep.
Fascinating topic. It's certainly. Do you think we're ever going to get all the details? Because I know that, you know, part of the other thing that shrouds the mystery is the fact that they sealed all the documents until what year.
We're not going to have all these documents for a long, long time, and then they may get lost on the way to giving them to us.
What was the logic at the time for doing that, to secure these documents and not reveal them until the year?
Well, we don't know what's inside, do we? And I guess we're going to find out. The problem is that they're withholding this information, and the Warren Commission, put up by Lyndon Johnson, was basically an agenda. They were supposed to calm the country down because all of these stories you mentioned, 1,000 books and theories and all this kind of stuff, even a chauffeur was supposed to kill Kennedy and that kind of nonsense. And the job of Lyndon Johnson was to commission these guys and come up and say it was a lone assassin, it was the bullet that killed him, and that was it, and he acted alone. And that supposedly was going to take care of everything, but it didn't. And particularly when you look at the autopsy report and when you see seven doctors at the hospital swearing up and down that the back of the head was blown off. And if it's the back of the head, it means that there was somebody in the front to shoot. And it couldn't have been Lee Harvey Oswald because he was behind the car. And so the theory goes on. If they would only be honest to us, it would have ended. Look at the killing of his brother 4.5 years later. We found out about Sirhan. Sirhan, we don't know his motive, but we knew who did it. And nobody seems to be that much interested in following the theory.
You answered your own question at the beginning. Why people are so interested? It's because there's all this mystery that still shrouds the story.
Exactly, but there's not that much that's secretive on the RFK, and so nobody's really asking.
Exactly. Fascinating stuff, Bill Dean. I know you've worked on this for a long time. You have a fascinating book, too, called Smooth Criminal, One Man American Crime Wave. People can find that on a page on Facebook, and also just go to Amazon.com and put in Smooth Criminal Bill Dean, right?
Yeah.
And you'll get it.
Yep.
And your website,
armmissingnews.com.
Yep, and you have you uncover different stories that the mainstream media refuses to or doesn't have time to tackle. So people who are interested in all that kind of stuff, do a little research. That's what's beautiful about the Internet. We have all these new outlets out there. And, Bill, you've been doing it for a long time. Keep going strong, and I thank you so much for coming back and seeing us. I hope you come back and see us again.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and thank you very much for listening, all of you.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, Bill. Bill Dean on the Amy Beth Arkley Show, 347-857-4505, gets you into the mix.
Every day I wake up, pour myself a cup of that rich Folgers aroma.
The best part of waking up,
it's the doo-wop,
doo-wop, did all I do.
The mountain goat aroma, always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up, Folgers in your cup.
Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop, diddy.
The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Welcome back. It is the Amy Beth Arkley Show, 347-857-4505. If you're listening live, or you can hit us up on Twitter at AB Writes. Saigon says, it's a crazy story. I don't believe it. Well, I don't know. Which one don't you believe? There's so many crazy stories on this. Let's put it into some historical context with Bill Curtis and our friends from Joe Gorner, and we interrupt this broadcast.
He was the youngest man ever elected president, and his youthful exuberance gave the nation a contagious spirit of freshness and vitality. From the moment he delivered his stirring inaugural address on a bright, cold January day in 1961, John F. Kennedy became an icon in the romantic imagination of the American people. He was a man in the prime of life when he traveled to Dallas, Texas in November 1963 on a routine political fence-mending mission to help shore up his chances for re-election as president the following year. At about 12:30 on the afternoon of November 22nd, he was riding in an open convertible with his wife through downtown Dallas, waving to cheering crowds, when the unthinkable occurred, an unforgettable event that would haunt and define the turbulent decade to come.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in as we're talking here. President Kennedy, according to the Associated Press, and Texas Governor John Connally were shot from ambush today in Dallas, Texas, and it is not known whether either Mr. Kennedy or Governor Connally were killed. Both Mrs. Kennedy...
We're canceling all regular formats during this emergency. All regular formats canceled. We'll continue to bring you news and bulletins. No commercial formats.
Here's other information just in from the correspondents traveling with the presidential party. It says President Kennedy apparently was shot in the head. The president...
An important bulletin. President Kennedy was given blood transfusions just a few moments ago at Parkland Hospital in an effort to save his life.
While most Americans were not at home in front of their televisions that fateful Friday afternoon, CBS newsman Walter Cronkite earned his place in television history with a broadcast interruption that has become inextricably attached to the memory of that horrible event. At 2:38 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, his voice cracking, he delivered the shocking news.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital.
John F. Kennedy was mortally wounded by shots fired from a high-powered rifle. He died within an hour. Over the course of the next 4 days, network television made the unprecedented decision to suspend all other programming to inform and unite a nation in its collective mourning.
Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy and her daughter, Caroline, are now going forward to the casket. Some people are in tears.
When John Kennedy died, the optimistic spirit of the new frontier seemed to perish with him. But the turmoil, which would mark the rest of the 60s decade, had only just begun.
He freed a lot of people, but it seems good they die young. You know, I just look around and he's gone. Anybody here seen my old friend John? Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seems good they die young. I just look around and he's I just look around, he's gone. Didn't you love the things that they stood for? Didn't they try to find some good for you and me? Then we'll be free someday. He's gonna be one day. Anybody here see my old friend Bobby? Can you tell me where he's gone? Abraham and Martin and John.
Wow, what a great song. Yeah. Kind of sums up that island, decades of the 60s almost. Three people that were killed, John F. Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and, of course, a reference to Abraham Lincoln as well. Wow. Hey, it is the Amy Beth Erkowitz Show. We're remembering John F. Kennedy coming up on the 50th anniversary of his assassination on Friday. And thanks again to Bill Dean, the investigative journalist and author, who does believe there was a conspiracy. In fact, he believes it was the mob who used Oswald, but that the CIA and the FBI and Castro knew about it. The thing that I can't get my head around is why would they allow him to have driven in that convertible motorcade had they known the threats were that real? That, to me, is questionable. But, of course, less than 48 hours later, Lee Harvey Oswald was also killed. Once again, Bill Curtis.
Pandemonium reigned in downtown Dallas on the afternoon of November 22, 1963. An assassin's bullet had murdered the People's President, John F. Kennedy, who only moments before had been waving to crowds from an open motorcade as he made his way through Dealey Plaza. Within an hour, police had arrested their lead suspect, Lee Harvey Oswald, a former Marine and accomplished sharpshooter. For the next 2 days, hundreds of reporters and photographers descended on police headquarters in Dallas to catch a glimpse of the accused assassin.
At a press conference moments ago, Dallas Police Chief Jess Curry indicated that the suspected assassin of President Kennedy would be moved to Dallas County Jail shortly. He indicated privately to this reporter that he was trying to arrange for an armored truck to take the assassin the 15 blocks to Dallas County Jail. He admitted that several threatening phone calls had been received saying that they would never get Lee Oswald to County Jail alive. Therefore, the arrangements for the armored truck are now being made.
Inexperienced at dealing with the horde of news media, Dallas Police Headquarters was a chaotic scene with unusually lax security measures. On Sunday morning, November 24th, with radio microphones and TV cameras in place, Oswald was led through the department's basement for transport to the county jail. And for the first time, the nation watched a national news event as it happened.
Now the prisoner is being moved out toward an armored car.
Ike Pappas, a reporter from WNEW New York, was on the scene.
There is the prisoner. Do you have anything to say in your defense? There's a shot. Oswald has been shot. Mass confusion here. Holy mackerel. A shot rang out as he was led into his car. He was thrown to the ground. The police have the entire area blocked off. An ambulance has arrived. They are rushing a mobile stretcher in. Here is young Oswald now. He is being hustled in. He is lying flat. To me, he appears dead. There is a gunshot wound in his lower abdomen. He is white, lying in the ambulance. His head is back. He is out, unconscious. Dangling, his hand is dangling over the edge of the stretcher, and now the ambulance is moving out. The flashing red lights.
One of the most sensational developments in this already fantastic case.
The nation was stunned by a second assassination in 2 days.
This is Bob Jett, WRR Mutual News, Dallas, Texas. We have just received a confirmed report from Parkland Hospital that Lee Harvey Oswald has died.
Jack Ruby, a Dallas nightclub owner and friend of local police, had slipped into the police department basement that morning and shot Oswald in front of dozens of news reporters and photographers. But instead of bringing emotional closure to the JFK assassination with his eye-for-an-eye murder of the lead suspect, Ruby's act only served to widen the web of uncertain facts and motives surrounding that tragic event, suffusing it with an aura of suspicion and mystery which lingers to this day.
There are lots of children here who do not understand. They squirm in the parents' arms. Reluctantly they hold their hands. When they look out the windows, all they see are city streets. They don't like the videos, they're black and white and have no beats. There are people speaking Chinese, speaking Spanish too. Though most here look a lot like me, you'd probably think that they look like you. A group of New Zealanders just came through the door. It's Wednesday afternoon in Dallas, here on the sixth floor. Everyone remembers where they were that awful day. The man in line behind me says he was in high school rehearsing a play. The woman with him says she was on the cinder track. When she heard the news and being here brings it all back, we weave our way through memorabilia hung up on the wall. Campaign posters, photos of weddings and children running through those fabled halls. A brief display on Cuba and the Vietnam War. You can't help but wonder what might have been as you stroll around the sixth floor. There was nobody holding him back. Nobody could keep him down. Not your usual golden child. His hair and his eyes were brown. Everybody knew his name, his face. He lived in the glow of fame, flamed out in a state of grace. There were no witnesses except the ocean below and a few distant fallen stars. A hell of a way to go. The ashes have been scattered, the evidence gone. Between the moon and the rising tide, our lives just went on. Now we stand at the dawn of a century and look back across the years at the planes and the guns, the fathers, the sons who have disappeared when cameras have stopped rolling and the crowds are gone. Between the moon and the rising tide, our lives just go on. 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 Our lives just go on.
High school students shooting each other.
Our lives just go on.
Two little boys, grandmother, mother.
Our lives just go on.
The fascination with Jean
Benet. Our lives just go on.
The submarine was doomed, but still we parade.
Our lives just go on.
Spend your money here, .com.
Our lives just go on.
Wild China.
while the struggle continues and leads to more. Our lives just go on. Our lives just go on. Our lives just go on. Our lives just go on.
I wrote this song with a pen and gray.
Our lives just
go on. The sixth floor.
Song from Christine Lavin, Sixth Floor, Moon Rising Tide, and We Are the Lucky. Capturing not only the memories of reflecting back on that.
Thank you
day,
so much.
November 22nd, 1963. But putting in context all the violence and all the tragedies that came thereafter. It is the Amy Beth Urquhart Show. We have been remembering JFK, the conspiracy theory surrounding his assassination, and the myth that his life and his legacy has become, because really when a life is cut so short, a life of such promise and such hope, he becomes larger than life. He becomes lionized, as so many people do in that position. So what could have been, what might have been, is always etched in our cultural psyche. Thanks again, Bill Dean, for coming on and sharing his thoughts on the conspiracy theories. I'm not sure what I think at this point, but it's a fascinating story, and it's one that's shrouded in mystery, and we're all about story on this show, so it certainly does grip our imaginations. A couple of abbreviated notes on the Free Flow Pop Culture Convo. It's Chaney Family Feud. You know, Liz Cheney apparently is feuding now with her sister Mary, who is a lesbian. She is married to a woman, but Liz Cheney, who's running for Senate in Wyoming, where she recently purchased a house. Family owned a house there, but she primarily lived in the Washington area for many, many years. She's running against an incumbent Republican, but she says he's not extreme enough, so she has to disavow her sister and her sister's family. This has caught quite a dust-up on Facebook over the weekend. Liz Cheney out on the TV show saying she loves her sister and her sister's family, but she doesn't believe in gay marriage. The sister Mary and her wife Heather have taken to Facebook and Twitter and other places, I guess, to say that Liz is a hypocrite, that she came to their wedding, that she showed them love, and now it's just all about politics. So it will not be fun at the Cheney family Thanksgiving. It'll be sort of like reminiscent of what happened in 2000 at the Bush family when they had Jeb at the kiddie table in the corner. And Alec Baldwin back in the news. You know, I was looking forward to seeing his MSNBC show on Friday. I turned it on, and we were back in prison in lockup. Apparently, he was suspended. I thought, well, maybe he was just distressed because of all the stuff going on with his stalker trial. He was suspended because during that trial, he had another run-in with paparazzi, and apparently he spewed a homophobic epithet at this person, and MSNBC suspended him. I'm not sure when he'll be back or if he'll be back. He issued a statement saying he's considering quitting show business, due to the safety of his family. He wants to protect his family. So I guess we'll see what happens. I thought that show had promise, and I'm sorry he's under the gun. But certainly he's got to control his temper, too, and some of the stuff and the language that he's used in recent years against photographers and journalists and people who's been embattled with, who do swarm him. I mean, you do see on TV, they really should not be this aggressive, but that's what they do. And he got into some Twitter feuds with people and took him to his Twitter account down, but apparently shouted something out that was not too complimentary and, in fact, very derogatory, and MSNBC has suspended him. I'm not sure if they've lifted that suspension or any more info on that, but that's where we're at. And the Inspiration to Action Challenge, I want to say a big shout-out to Billy from Cheshire, Connecticut, who wrote me a lovely note. He said, guess what, Amy Beth, we've gotten the band back together after 30-some years. He and his old college buddies have decided to start playing again together. We're practicing, and we're booking a couple of gigs for the spring. Well, there you go, the Inspiration to Action Challenge, spurring Billy on to reconnect with his musical talents and getting his friends to do it, too. I love to hear that. I hope it's working for you. You know what it's all about. Get yourself an old-fashioned pen and paper notebook and just start in. If you haven't done it yet, write down every day something that brings you joy, one thing that inspires you, one thing for which you are grateful. Try to weave in at least a couple of times a week an act of kindness that you've bestowed upon someone or someone's bestowed upon you, and then get some goals together. Three goals is kind of manageable within a three-month period, and then for each goal, break it down to 3 to 5 action steps and just get started. Now, obviously, if you didn't start in September, you can't complete your goals yet, but start now. From where you are, start and let us know. If I can be of any assistance to you, by all means, hop over to the website, amybetharkowee.com, click on the contact icon, and I will be certainly happy to help you. That's also the place to go should you have a story to tell. We're booking guests for 2014 already. Storytellers, folks who are authors and filmmakers, musicians, theater impresarios, etc., as well as media mavens who love to dish hot topics in the news and TV, movie, that sort of thing. So get it together, get in there, and you can find us also at the Blog Talk Radio site. It's the Amy Beth Arkowee Show, also available on iTunes. And don't forget, all shows are always available for podcasts. That's the beauty of these internet shows. You can listen anytime, so if you miss one or you want to hear one again or link it to a site or something, by all means, please feel free to do so. And, in fact, we're grateful when you do. Also, of course, you can hit us up on Twitter at ABWrites. Don't forget, next Monday, we're off this Friday so we can get ready for the Grateful Bounty, our big Thanksgiving request and dedication show. So set to air next Monday at noon. We'd love to hear from you for your requests and dedications. Already fielding a bunch of them. It will be a bounty, a cornucopia of great songs, as well as some creative inspiration and notes of gratitude along the way, some funny bits we put together for you. It takes a little time to load it all in, but we're working on it. Trudy, Aurora, and ML at TCS are helping us get it done. So by all means, you can send your request to the website or at Twitter at ABWrites. Just give me the hashtag GratefulBounty. We'll try to get it on for you on Monday. I hope you have a great week. There are a lot of these specials going on about JFK. If you're fascinated by the story, as so many people are, I think every network is doing a special on it. I know HBO is going to be having a re-airing on Friday. Friday, I believe. It's Friday or Saturday? Friday. They are re-airing they're going to be re-airing a one-time only encore presentation of the 1988 documentary JFK in His Own Words this Friday night at 9, and it will feature rare film footage and audio tapes, and it follows his life from childhood through his election, the presidency, and the 1,000 days of his administration. So check that out. Of course, as we mentioned, there are all kinds of movies. I recommend Parkland. It's a beautiful little film, mostly about the people surrounding the assassination that day. There's another great movie called Bobby, Emilio Estevez's film, about people who were affected by the Bobby Kennedy assassination, but it really takes you into the lives of people who were at the Ambassador Hotel the days leading up to the assassination, but that's a fascinating film as well, so if you're interested in that. And, of course, if you want to find out more about Bill Dean, go to his website, OurMissingNews.com, and find out more about his book, Smooth Criminal, A One-Man American Crime Wave. So many fascinating stories out there. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you have a good week again. Our hearts go out to the folks in the Midwest who are cleaning up after those tornadoes. Stay strong. We're with you. Lots of tragedies in the weather these days, and the folks in the Philippines, not good news. And people want to deny global warming. I'm not sure if this has anything to do with it, but it's a very sad situation out there. So stay strong, stay safe. Wherever you go, whatever you do, please drive safe, play nice, dream big, and come back and see us next Monday on the Amy Beth Arkowee Show. Take care.
Salvation Army band played, and the children drank lemonade, and the morning lasted all day. And through an open window came, like Sinatra in a younger day, pushing the town away.
Future, if we ever go to trial again, maybe we ought to know what we're doing.
A public service announcement followed me home the other day. I paid it, never mind. Go away. Shit so thick you can stir with a thick creed Teflon whitewash presidency. We're sick of being jerked around. Broadcast me a joyful noise. We do the time, Lord, count your blessings. We're sick of being jerked around. We all fall down. Have you ever seen the televised invited subcommittee prize? Investigation dance, those ancient dance plans set us out of the behind the eyes. It's a hallowed, hollow anesthetized. Take my illness, screw these guys. Smoke and mirror lockdown. Broadcast me a joyful noise. Teach you the times. Broadcast count your blessings. The papers wouldn't lie.
And I hope to see you again soon, and I love you, and thank you very much. Now, till we meet again.
I want to say that y'all are some of the sweetest people I know, really. That's all you got to keep doing is feeling good with your music. Get down! If you disrespect everybody that you run into, how in the world do you expect anybody to respect you? Don't give a damn about the man with a Bible in his hand. Respect yourself. Respect yourself. Respect yourself. If you don't respect yourself, ain't nobody gonna give a good goddamn no. People talk about the president. He won't stop the air pollution. Now listen, put your hand over your mouth when you cough. That'll help the solution. Don't give a damn about the man with the Bible in his hand. Just get out of here and let the gentleman
yourself. Respect yourself. Get down. Solution.